This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. You're listening to an edited recording of this year's BFM Health and Living live event by AIA Vitality.
We look at the sandwich generation, middle-aged individuals who are pressured with the obligation to support for and care for elderly parents whilst raising their own children. We discuss the physical and emotional toll this takes on a person's quality of life and how it affects men and women differently. And presenting and inviting up on stage our moderator for today, producer-presenter of the evening edition, Lee Chui Lin, followed by our speakers, Dr. Peter Eng Pin, consultant urologist, Subang Jaya Medical Center, Dr. Muhammad Rusti Abdullah, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Lee Seifat, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, and Shantani Ruth Vanya Singham, clinical psychologist, all from Subang Jaya Medical Center.
Hello, everyone. I guess everyone's warmed up and ready to go. Just to say again what Meera said earlier, which is that on stage we have you covered almost, I think, pretty close from head to toe. We have people who can do women's health, men's health. We have an orthopedic surgeon. We have a clinical psychologist. So let's start things off. My first question is really for all of you, which is, generally speaking, what are the concerns that a lot of people speak to you about, that a lot of your patients are actually bringing to you? And when they come in to speak to you, do they also talk about their family? Do they also ask about their family? Shantani, perhaps you can kick it off.
Yes, when patients come to see me, usually, because I'm a clinical psychologist, they come because they have some kind of problem, either, you know, with anxiety or panic, and they're usually not feeling very good about themselves. And more often than not, when I take a history and I try and find out what their lifestyles are like, they tell me about their whole day, what they do, their jobs, their family, their children, etc. And at the end of the day, they'll carry on until they go to sleep at night. Then I'll say, what did you do for yourself during the day? And there'll be dead silence. So more often than not, I find that people don't actually give to themselves. They don't have time for themselves during the day because they're busy and they have many commitments. I mean, looking after maybe elderly parents or even children, and then having maybe your own career, having to provide, having to look to other people's needs, other members of your family's needs, it's sometimes easy to put yourself last. And at the end of the day, there'll be no space for that. But I often stress to them that maybe you can give yourself 10, 15 minutes during the day just to maybe have a drink, have a cup of tea, have a coffee and a biscuit, just to have some me time in silence. And then they'll say, oh, no, but I do that. But actually what they're doing is they're just having the cup of tea and they're thinking, you know, what time do I need to pick my child from school? You know, what do I have to cook for dinner, etc. But actually the me time, to actually enjoy that moment, there's very few people do that, because otherwise it will store up and it's like almost carrying a very heavy backpack and you're filling it every day with stones and stresses and you don't have any time to release it. And it will come a point where that backpack will be far too heavy, and then that's when you feel really down. You might get anxiety, sleepless nights. You also can get palpitations, physical symptoms. Many of my cases are also referred by cardiologists because people think they're having some sort of heart problem, but actually it's not. It's just that they're very, very stressed. So I do see those kind of people.
And doctors, what are the things that, you know, you most commonly see in your clinics?
Hi, I'm Dr. Lee. Okay, I'm a gynecologist. So most of them, yeah, you're right. When they see us, many women actually bring up issues concerning their children, usually those teenagers with menses, menstrual-related problems, absence of menses, irregular menses, heavy bleeding and severe period pain. And many of them also discuss issues related to their own parents, their mother with urinary incontinence and also uterine prolapse. So these sandwich generations actually, when they come and see us, sometimes they do take the opportunity to actually discuss issues related to their children and their mother. So it's actually quite common when we see them. At the same time, for us, we also advise them regarding vaccinations for their children as well, and also for their own parents. In fact, vaccination is not only for children, and there are actually now many recommended vaccinations for older people as well. For example, for herpes, zoster, and so on and so forth.
Majority of patients that I've seen coming from this sandwich generation, I can divide into three major groups. Number one, problem related to trauma, motor vehicle accident, fall. Number two, fall into the category of overuse injury due to occupational or exercise. Number three, a patient can come due to problems that caused by unhealthy lifestyle, such as unhealthy diet, overweight. With the advancement of the technology, more people use smartphone with the wrong posture and overuse. So majority of the patients from the sandwich generation, I can categorize them into these three groups. So when I started my practice about 20 years ago, I could see some changes in the trend. Previously, more patients can be categorized from the orthopedic problem that caused by trauma. But within these 5 or 6 years, more and more patients come because of overuse or unhealthy lifestyle.
I'm Peter Ng, urologist. I usually see, well, people in sandwich generation who bring their older parents because of a whole host of urological problems, whether they be stones or prostate disease. And I find it, what I do actually, I have a questionnaire outside at the clinic, and that actually picks up quite a lot of patients with lower tract symptoms, symptoms that, you know, you seem innocuous, you got to pee at night, waking up at night, passing water, or frequently, or having slow stream. You'd be surprised at how much of that occurs in the community. So I think it's important to have this awareness out so that even with the questionnaire, everybody who comes along, they get to learn about it. For example, if I'm interviewing an elderly gentleman about his urinary problems, he's telling me he's waking up 15 times a night and all that, and then the other people are also listening. Women as well. Women have lower tract symptoms as well. A whole bunch of things like overactive bladder and other conditions. And they're listening and wondering, oh, maybe I've got a problem as well. So I think it's important, the sandwich generation, bringing these people in and also listening, filling up questionnaires. So it applies to the whole generation, especially for lower tract symptoms. They are very subtle. You might think waking up at night once or twice is normal. It isn't. It is a sign of something going on that really has got to be looked at. And if we're serious about improving our healthcare in our community, then we have to be cognizant of that.
Just to say that there is a common theme throughout of not just people coming in with their own problems, but specifically sometimes even bringing in their parents physically into the clinic. And there is a question here on Pigeonhole that's related to that, which is it possible to balance caring for parents, but at the same time not depriving them of their independence and dignity? And what is a good model to do that? So I suppose in terms of how you have each individually seen that sort of care being provided, perhaps you can take this question.
I think I got a struggle, if I could just jump in. I had a patient recently here who actually had lower tract symptoms, had blood in the urine. So obviously something's wrong, right? So, and the sandwich generation brought the older gentleman in to see me and obviously wanted him to have treatment. That you could see there's a huge struggle. The old man is in denial. Blood in the urine, who cares? You know, everybody's got blood in the urine, right? That's what he thinks. But they're so concerned and they're trying to get him to come in. But I've always stressed, if an elderly person has got good cognitive function, he needs to maintain his dignity. Sometimes the problem with the sandwich generation, you treat your mum and dad as if they're your kids. You got two sets of kids at home, the smaller one and the grayer one. And that actually insults them. And you could see the elderly gentleman sort of, you know, get a bit miffed, you know, and he goes in the opposite direction to which you're telling him to do. I could see that dynamic going on. And so therefore, the important thing is, in that situation, in my practice, is I lay off a little bit. I just say, look, the whole idea of coming to see a doctor is knowing your options. And once you know your options, then let Papa decide. Okay, I'll just lay it all out, and I tell them to back off. and they go home, have a discussion, and then they come back in again. And when they do that, they're more amenable to having it looked at. And sometimes we have to come to a compromise. The elderly guy may not want a whole lot of things done, right? We'll go halfway, and then we'll see what happens. So I think that's a dynamic. The sandwich generation has a temptation to treat the older generation like a certain set of kids, and that shouldn't happen.
Shantini, how do we introduce that at home, right? Because it's one thing to see it in a clinic and be able to address it there. But of course, I think the question was mostly referring to creating a space at home in which you can maintain that dignity while still providing care.
That's a tough one, but I think that also needs a lot of thought. You have to understand from, yes, what Dr. Heng is saying is about the parents having that kind of respect, and that sometimes individuals in the sandwich generation, they have a lot to do. So it's all about being efficient, providing the needs, seeing to the needs. And sometimes that can be a little bit condescending or done in a patronizing kind of way. I think it's important to understand as well from that individual that's providing the care, that parent, that person in maybe their 40s or 50s that is providing the care for their parents as well as their kids, it's important to understand that what they're experiencing as well, because they're seeing their parents going through the aging process. And let's face it, it's difficult to age. It would be wonderful and ideal if they could age gracefully, but it's a loss for the parents. It's a loss for the older person, because it's the loss of, you know, sometimes even a sense of purpose, because there's so much that they did for their kids, and now they almost feel that they're a bit redundant. So they're going through a loss, and it's also a loss for the person that's providing the care. It's also grieving, seeing their parents lose that, seeing their parents going older, seeing their parents becoming more dependent, seeing their parents having more aches and pains, maybe even going through incontinence, which is also quite humiliating. And I think that you have to realize that's a huge sense of loss there. So it's about trying to understand from that carer's perspective, as well as maybe trying to provide like options for the older person, saying, well, these are the options possible. Let's see how you feel about it. Maybe we could discuss it maybe with the doctor. And sometimes discussing it with the health professional might be a little bit easier than discussing it with your family members, because you can share certain things with your health professional, and that can be private. Well, you know, for you to tell your child that I'm really worried that I'm incontinent and I might wet my bed, it can be quite humiliating as well. But I think it's a two-way process. It's also important to understand that it's a loss for the person caring as well, to see their parents who once were healthy, strong, suddenly become more dependent. And it's a tough situation, because they also want to be independent. It's about adjusting that, getting friends to talk to them, getting peers to talk to them, you know. So giving them options, I think it's quite good. And, standing back and looking at that as well.
I just want to chip in from the older perspective. An older person like I am now, I mean, the sandwich generation is like bemoaning the fact that they can look after two sets of kids, the older ones and the younger one, you know? And I'm like one of them, and I don't want to be a burden to my children. And the reason why we hide our health problems, especially the men, is that we've always been the macho guy, the head of the family, right? We would not want to burden our children. And so we downplay our symptoms, because we know how our children suffer having to take us in the house and everything else. So I think that's a real struggle, not necessarily with dignity, but you love your kids and you don't want to be a burden to them.
That's why sometimes talking to the health professional would be better for them, like their doctor who has a problem, because the doctor can keep that private, and you know, they don't have to share that so much with the child, you know, so that...
You know what really works is going to the coffee shop every morning and talking to your friends.
Yeah, or talking to your friends. You know, absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, they've got this problem, I've got this problem, and they pass the word around, and then they're up to the doctor the next day.
Yeah.
It's a lot better than having your kid tell you, hey, Pa, you got to go and see a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Talking to your friends,
I think, are important too. But yeah, again, it's important to see how subjective that advice is as well. So sometimes that advice may not be ideal. So I think, you know, talking to a range of people, I think, might be the good thing, really.
Whether it's friends, whether it's a healthcare provider, the point is at least you're talking to someone, right?
And communicate to open that communication.
We'll be back after a break for more from the panel discussion at this year's BFM Health and Living Live event by AIA Vitality. Welcome back to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. This is an edited recording of this year's BFM Health and Living Live event by AIA Vitality.
While we're talking about trying to identify these issues or trying to identify early signs that perhaps more care needs to be taken with health, it's good that we have both a urologist and an obstetrician and gynecologist on stage, because do you think that there is a difference in terms of awareness when it comes to men and women's health?
Of course, I think there is. I think women are more aware of their health, because if you look at young girls when they transition during puberty, so there's a drastic and obvious physiological and physical changes. So they need information when they go through this transition. So this information are readily available from family members, their elder siblings, from books, from internet, and then from their teachers as well, and from their family doctors. From that transition period, they already are fed information regarding their health, their changes that they undergo. So when they go through their reproductive period, then there may be a need for pregnancy and raise family. Then they will see the gynecologist. Okay. Then when they have go through perimenopausal period, when they face menstrual-related issues, they will also see their own gynecologist and then menopausal period. Therefore, I think it's a pity for men. Because women, when they have a problem, they know they have somebody to take care of them. Men, they are clueless and they are not sure who they should see, even when they don't have a problem or they want to just to discuss issues. Because if, traditionally, we say that urologists take care of men. But if they look at the name urologist, it refers to urinary tract. I have other issues. Why should I see a doctor dealing with pee? So that's the problem. That's why I think women are at an advantage, because we are here to help you take care of your health. We screen you, we give you advice, we look after you during your pregnancy, after childbirth, perimenopausal, menopausal. And not only that, you come to us for screening. For example, women are also told that you must go for your regular pap smear, health screening, your vaccination. So women who comes and see us for screening, specifically pap smear, we do take the opportunity to educate you about your reproductive needs, okay, infection prevention, vaccination, and etc. And also at the same time, advise you on your mammogram, your general health screening, your lipid profile, check your blood pressure, and etc. So therefore, as far as information are concerned, I think women are at the advantage.
Dr. Peter, is this gap something you've seen?
So, you know, it's the innate gender difference, isn't it? Like my wife would be fastidious. Every little detail, she's ready 4 hours before the airplane takes off. I'd get there an hour before. I mean, it's a fact. It's a gender difference. I mean, and they'd make sure everything is checked. For us men, you know, we are supposed to be indestructible, isn't it? We lead the family, we lead the charge, devil may care, kind of maverick attitude. You know, and if we are hit with a disease, it's a loss of our self-esteem. It strikes at the very heart of who we are. So we're in denial. So men are always in denial. All right, for not only health things, you know,
larger
for,
issues.
Yeah,
at
larger
play.
Issues as well. So that's the default mode. So it's, you know, basically, they drag a man kicking and screaming into the doctor's office before he realizes there's a chink in his armor, and I think we have to address that the maybe go more from the traditional attitude of what men are to more the metrosexual man, you know, who's more in touch with his feelings and perhaps his health issues. So I think it's a gender difference.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there about fundamental gender differences, but we have a short panel. So I did want to ask, Dr. Rusty, from your perspective, we've heard about, you know, the different stages that Dr. Lee in particular sees patients through. From your perspective, what does aging do? You know, how does aging affect the body, and how do you see that play out in your clinic?
There is a life cycle for each of our cells. So for orthopedic parts, at the start of your life until about 30 years of age, the balance in between tissue grow and tissue destruction is almost, we can say, like 1-to-1. So after we reach around 30 years of age, this balance will slowly become disrupted. More cell destruction happen compared to repair and formation. And with the influence of hormonal changes, lack of time for exercise, and wrong or unhealthy lifestyle, and also changes in the metabolic rate, the rate of repair or new cell formation will become poorer and poorer. So that's why when we reach around 50 or 60 years old, our muscles, bones, tendons, cartilage in the joints become weak.
There are parents who, I think, in that spirit of not wanting to be a burden, refuse to seek treatment due to financial constraints, saying, it's okay, we're old already, no point prolonging. How should children respond to this? Because that is also, I think, related to this idea of being a burden, right? And also wanting your children to have the best life possible.
But it all depends on what is the presenting problem. If it is not causing much, affecting the quality of life, and if lifestyle modification, some changes to the social environment, the house, for example, stay downstairs and all that, and if that agreeable, and I think that's a reasonable option, I think that's fine. But at the end of the day, it's up to the patient and the family members to accept whatever management option that is reasonable, that actually can help to improve the quality of life, okay? Instead of going for a more advanced or drastic option, which is not cost-effective.
I think the problem will be in that agreement of that whole process, because it's difficult sometimes to come to that agreement. But in general, making the older person feel valued and respected, I think the value that you put on it, because care is one thing, but, you know, sometimes it's a loss of value. So, you know, like sometimes incorporating old stories, telling them about, you know, telling the grandchildren about your lifestyle, telling, you know, stories are important. So it's about that person feeling valued. And for you to maybe send out the signs that, okay, maybe I ask you to do things, I ask you about your health, or have you done this, or have you done that, it's only because I really love you and I value you. So I like, you took care of me when I was younger, you valued me. I didn't like it when you told me I couldn't go on the playground, the highest mat slide, but it's because of value. So if you show that value on the other person, I think that can help to buffer some of these issues that might come about.
One idea that's actually happened in my family that will be useful to people here, basically as a testimony, is that if your younger generation tells the older generation what to do, it's kind of difficult, right? Now, my kids, both in their 20s, now, you know, like most young people, get into the craze of physical gym work and putting muscles on, low-carbohydrate diet, and it's changed the dynamic of our entire family. We don't go to Chinese restaurants here and there to eat because they're on their diet. I never did understand. So now that we're older, we get together, family, have a good meal, right? Enjoy ourselves. No, they have to have no carbohydrates. They have to have this protein drink and all this. I got really upset. So after a while, and they don't look forward to going out with me anymore. And I thought, oh my God, what is this? But later on, because they're both doing it, but for ulterior motives, so they get wives, right? Big muscles and all that. So, but after a while, the healthy lifestyle influences me as well. Then I started going to gym too, going low carbohydrate diet, lost some weight and feel very proud about that. And then my wife also gets into it. So it's a culture that's been passed on to us by the younger generation to the older generation. I'd never worked out my day in my life for 60 years, except the last 6 months. And you couldn't have forced me to do it. But if I see the results in my kids and the whole culture of family revolves around, we sit around the table and we're talking about health food, about chia seeds and how good they are. And I mean, ultimately, it'll affect you, isn't it? And so therefore, that subtle leadership by the younger generation leading to extension of life of the older generation rather than telling your pa, you got to eat chia seeds, right? So I think that is something that I think the sandwich generation can take, because prevention is better than cure.
Dr. Rusty, I mean, if we're talking about 60-year-olds who've never worked out a day in their life, suddenly, you know, just getting into it at the gym with 20-something-year-olds, perhaps you can give some advice there about how that can be introduced in a healthy, sustainable way.
I think this is very, very good. especially for Dr. Peter. If you get older, you should reduce a little bit on the aerobic or endurance exercise, which can predispose you to injury. So focus more on stability, stretching, and flexibility, strengthening of muscles. Spend every day to use the rubber band exercise. Do a lot of stretching when you wake up in the morning.
Another question that's come through from Pigeonhole, and I think because we've been talking quite a lot about the sandwich generation, there have been quite a few Gen Yers, Gen Zers who are participating saying, you know, as a Gen Y person and career female, I will enter the sandwich generation in the next 5 years or so. How does one prep for this, especially, you know, with the changes in this world, especially with how quickly things are going?
I think with open communication, just keep those communication links open. Talk to your kids, talk to your parents, talk to your friends, talk to people, and also never be afraid to say, I can't cope, I need to get some help. Ask for help when you need it. It's okay, because sometimes it could be just a chat with a friend in a coffee shop. It could be something like that. And it just to get you back on track. So talking about things and asking for help, I think it's important.
In line with that, another question that's come in that's gotten quite a few votes has been, how does one manage the balance between being a wife, mother, daughter, work, caregiver? Finding a balance is never easy. More often than not, you feel like you failed in one or more roles. And I think this would probably apply evenly across the, you know, both genders, that feeling of balance.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is to realize that absolute balance is important. It's impossible, really. Your shoulds and your wants, they can never be completely balanced. It goes up and down a little bit, and there's a bit of variation. But as long as you try your best not to let the shoulds go too far down, and the wants go too far down. I think realizing that it's fluid, it's a fluid process, it doesn't always stay like that, and you balance it as much as you can, one step at a time and day by day. And like I said, having that cup of coffee, no point thinking about what you're going to be doing in the next 15 minutes. Having that cup of coffee and actually saying, this is for me and I'm really enjoying it and I'm just going to take that time out. So having that awareness to say that to yourself, having that awareness that, hey, you know, even if I just went for 15 minutes and I had a lie down, I did it for myself. That already helps you to tip that balance, you know, in a better direction. And it changes from time to time. And I think looking after your mental health is also very important. You know, do what you need to do. Go, you know, do a bit of meditation, do a bit of mindfulness exercises, because that balance also comes from good mental health as well.
I want to take us back to that coffee shop earlier, the coffee shop every morning with your friends, because another question that came through from Pigeonhole was support systems. It's crucial in terms of your mental health. What ways can we create a strong community that's not just within families, that can actually help and support each other? So we've already had one idea, but I think what happens if you are feeling a little bit more isolated than that maybe? How can we help to create that safety net?
I think look around and see what, you know, some people do it through religious groups. Some people do it through, you know, they may have a mahjong group or a bridge group or some interest that they have, a joint interest. And if you have any sort of like common interest with other people, you know, maybe get a book club, do something that actually you can do with other groups of people. Look around and start building up those kind of systems and those network support systems, because it doesn't just come easily. It needs, like everything else, it needs work. So you have to work at maybe calling your friends, keeping in touch with people, building it up from now, I think is also important.
Actually, there are many support groups available. For example, menopause. So there's actually Malaysian Menopause Society actually has a support group. They actually organize events, get together and all that for women. And in this type of gathering or group meeting, there will be doctors there to actually help you address some of your issues. So they are. So you have to just have to look around.
Do you think that there is a very big generational divide in terms of how people approach their health? And is that contributing to an inability to be able to communicate to one another because you just have such different ideas?
Yeah, I do agree that's a huge generation gap in terms of knowledge about health. I think the, now the Gen Y who are more educated, who have more access to information, I think they are more conscious of, you know, certain lifestyle, like what Peter said, you know, the children are all into, you know, healthy lifestyle, you know, look out for foods that, you know, what can eat, cannot eat to maintain healthy lifestyle. So I think that is, I mean, we look after, you know, our parents and all that, they got such strong cultural belief, you know, what can do, cannot eat. So some of them are actually not very healthy. So I do agree there's a generation gap. I mean, recent data have come out that say 1 out of every 5 deaths is due to poor lifestyle, poor diet. That's the highest single cause of killers in the world. Not because of cancer or other things, but so the younger generations now, I think they have more access to information. They can read, you know, they know what is, you know, and they want to look good. So go on a healthy diet, things like that, and exercise. So I think there is a difference.
I think there is a difference, but I can see a shift as well in what you read in the newspapers today. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the maybe older generation who don't use Facebook or so much of WhatsApp or the social media, what you're reading also, there's an awareness shifting as well in what you read in just generally the newspapers, because that comes out about healthy lifestyle, you know, healthy diets, all that's changing. So I think they're becoming more aware, but I do think, yes, the younger generation have an advantage because they're exposed to a lot of information. And that's a good thing, but I think you need to also be quite careful of what you're exposed to, because you can read a lot of things that, you know, unless you can actually filter it, I think that's also something that you need to do too.
We have just time for a couple of questions, one of which is about the gender divide. So do women suffer a heavier burden and greater stress, perhaps including depression, because they're expected to take care or take charge of these things, household, care for parents and children, while also having a full-time job?
I think women do take on that burden quite a bit. And also, it depends as well, whether it's a double-income family or single-income family. And I do look at women because they do feel quite stressed. I think it's also about highlighting your needs and being able to say, look, you've got to help me in the household. I sometimes tell couples and families that come to see me, take turns. Maybe one day the daddy does it, one day the mum does it. So that gives the other person a little bit of respite. Having space to rest is important for a healthy family lifestyle. So taking turns, sharing the burden for each spouse, each partner, each family member to be aware that they have a responsibility in playing a role, and they have a responsibility in lightening the load of one person, I think it's important. So having that awareness is crucial.
All right. And as we wrap up today, I suppose we've had a pretty wide-ranging conversation covering just touching on a number of different issues that affect people within the sandwich generation. What would your final message be from each of you about how best to cope if you're a member of the sandwich generation or as you prepare to become a member?
Well, my message would be having a bit of time for yourself and also taking care of yourself is important. Even if it's a little time within the day, having that space and time for yourself, because you have to give to yourself in order to be able to give to others. So you have to also put in something into your body and your mind, and I think that's important. So taking care of yourself, giving a little space to yourself, and communicating your needs to other members is important. Always open that communication, and it's okay to say, I can't cope here, I need a little bit of help. So being confident and honest enough to say that, I think that's important. That would be my takeaway message.
I do agree with Chantini. I think you must be healthy. You must be healthy enough to look after other people. So you want to help other people, you must make sure you are healthy. So that's, I agree, and then communication. Coming back to your questions that women has a heavy burden on their shoulder, I totally agree. You know, they have to do everything. And there was some research paper that came out. What's the secret for happy family and relationship between husband and wife? It's when the husband helps out in the household.
My final message is always prevention is always better than cure. So every day find some, maybe around 20 or 30 minutes for yourself to exercise, to relax, and to stretch your muscles.
I think we need to get rid of these male stereotypes. If you're helping out at home, helping chick in the kitchen, then you're henpecked. You're not quite the man. And then your in-laws will say, hey, what, you do the cooking as well?
as well as cook, as well as earning the living. And I mean, in-laws play a role in all this. It's cultural stereotypes that men have to live under. All right. So unless you break that, then it's not that men can't cook. They can if you give them an opportunity. But it just looks as if they're less of a man if they do it. I think some of that resistance is there. That's number one I'd like to add. So we need to break that kind of male stereotype. And in terms of the social media, why do you always have these ads, the health trainers, the guys who do go to gym, they're all like buff. Why can't you have people like, you know, ordinary guys do gym, right? The people who don't need to be in gym are in the gym. People who need to be in gym aren't in the gym. So because the ideal is so far off, a lot of older people find it's such a stretch for me to get there. I'll never be like that Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of figure, right? So we need to have stereotypes that are closer to home, they're more realistic, all right? So give them little bite-sized chunks to improve their health. And lastly, with sandwich generation, don't treat your father and mother like a second set of kids. The optimal health outcome which you want is not something you might be able to achieve. You have to accept, because they have their own minds, their own dignity, and their own ability to make decisions, you might have to settle for second best, even though second best is less than what you have wanted to, maybe of a shorter life or whatever it is, but the old man decides and we need to respect it. As long as the old man or the old women understand that they're being respected and not pushed, then I think we would get along a little bit better.
And on that note, thank you all very, very much, and thank you very much.
You've been listening to an edited recording of this year's BFM Health and Living Live event by AIA Vitality. This event was presented by AIA, enabling healthier, longer, better lives. This has been Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.